Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. For those of you joining us for the first time, Bad Storytellers is a podcast about a small group of amateur writers who submit and critique each other's work as well as discuss the written media we consume. It's like a book club but with a wider focus. Our group submissions are shared on our website, badstorytellers.com, and you can download them there if you'd like to read along with us. Additionally, we also accept your submissions for critique. If you would like some feedback with the same candor that we give each other, send in your submission to badstorytellers@gmail.com. Entries must be 10 pages or less. Additionally, at the end of each show, we roll the dice, pick three genres, and come up with a movie idea. Once we decide upon a name, we record the trailer for your listening pleasure. Enjoy! Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bad Storytellers Podcast, where we turn bad writers into good ones, starting with our own local writing group. I'm Joshua LaForge, your host, and with me is Douglas Banks.
Hello.
Liam Malone.
Yo.
And Max Wessel.
Hello.
Before we turn on the mics, we read each other's writing. Once the mics are on, we talk it out. The show notes and links for everything we discuss can be found on our website, badstorytellers.com. So, guys, how you guys doing?
Doing really well.
Doing all right.
Yes. My voice is better. I'm feeling pretty good about that.
It's true.
Awesome. Well, I got two retractions this week.
Oh, new
we
record.
We always start with retractions. So we were talking about what the Turk's name in The Godfather was. His name was Salazzo.
Okay. Yes.
Salazzo was his name.
Yeah. I would never remember that.
Yeah. Salazzo was his name-o?
Yes. Also, I was trying to think of the name of the Chuck Palahniuk book where they learn something to kill people when you say it aloud. It's called Lullaby. And they have a grimoire.
I am completely biased about Palahniuk. I will never read any of his shit.
Fight Club's really good.
That's a shame. He has like four or five good books.
Yeah, but Fight Club is great.
Not great books.
Just the D-bags that I knew used to read him. I just soured
on
the thing.
Too late, Liam. I'm just
it's
saying, don't late. Let fans ruin things, because I didn't listen to Metallica for 10 years based on fans of Metallica.
Mm-hmm. And now you listen to the first three albums.
Yeah. And I was the one who lost out of that gambit, you know?
It's like if I did that, I would never read, I never would have read Nietzsche.
No.
Kafka.
Yeah.
What's wrong with people who like Nietzsche?
Well,
Kafka?
I didn't watch
have
Doctor Who They're for like 10 years because of the fans. Then I started watching Doctor Who and I found out I was like 65% correct in not watching
Doctor
Who.
I have
Doctor
a 10-year moratorium on anything past Chris Eccleston.
Chris Eccleston?
One of the doctors.
He was good.
I don't know anything about him.
He's my favorite doctor.
Because, yeah, he's a fucking badass doctor.
He's my favorite doctor.
He's a great doctor.
What's his degree in?
Everything.
British kickassery, which they hand out degrees.
British history, for some reason, because he's an alien.
Yeah. Wearing a leather jacket and pulling it off.
Yeah, and he's from the north, so there's that.
Well, speaking of popular culture, what are you guys reading? What have you read, watched, or put in your eyes and ears this week to quote Nerdist Writers Panel?
Last week I mentioned the Ghost Set of Watchmen. So I've been reading this P.G. Wodehouse book, Ring for Jeeves. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it.
Did you finish Ghost Set of Watchmen?
Oh, I've never even started it.
Okay.
I'm glad you brought it up. Things. Yes. I like to pretend I read fine literature. But Wodehouse, it is a...
Wodehouse.
Like
Roadhouse.
W-O-D-E?
Yes.
Okay.
Jeeves is a superhero in the guise of a British butler. He knows everything and can do everything, and he helps this inept upper-class aristocrat through his life in their gambles and shambles. And
why?
What?
Because he's paid to?
Yeah, because he's a butler, and it's a feudal system, and he loves it.
You're my butler.
Yes.
Hmm. Okay, so he just doesn't become Superman because?
Yeah, no, he, like, and it's just high humor, and it's really fucking funny, and it was written.
I get into that. That's,
if you
that
enjoy
good.
Fry and Laurie, they did a show based on the books. That's where I found out about it. It is hilarious. If you like British humor.
Yeah.
And then...
There's some British humor I can get into.
Yeah.
And then, Black Books. I love Black Books.
Oh, I love Black Books so much. I started a new series on the Blu-ray.
Okay, the Blu-ray disc.
The Blu-ray disc
okay.
Format.
Okay, I'm with you.
It's a space adventure called Firefly.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
and I'm on the first season.
I think we've heard of that.
Yeah, there is only one season.
You're on the first season. Great.
I'm on the first season.
There's no other season.
Expanding from there, I think we're gonna have a good time with it.
It gets. What episode have you gotten to? Like,
oh, I've been watching it for years since it was on TV.
Oh,
but I just re-put it back in the Blu-ray player, and that theme song that I love comes out, and I'm like, yes, I'm back into this.
See, I actually hate the theme song.
I love it. It fits it so well.
I hate it, but the show gets so much better as it goes on.
You know
on.
Who I yes. hate? People who are like, oh, the theme song killed the show. No, maybe Fox not putting it on, like not putting on the pilot episode.
Because of the theme song.
I actually thought the pilot episode was the worst episode.
Yeah, well, no, I agree.
They put the third episode on when they don't explain to anyone who anyone is. They're just like, hey, Mal, let's go down to this. And you're like, well, who the fuck are these people?
That's one thing I didn't like about the show is that in the extra episodes after the third episode, they explain it at the beginning. They're like, my name's Mal. I do this, and this is what I've
they
been.
Had
and
to, here's though.
My. I'm here with my crew. They're weird. It's embarrassing.
Because Fox kept chopping up the episodes and putting it wherever they wanted, and it was such a good show. And they wanted to use all CGI for it. And he's like, for like $2,000, I could build the ship permanently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but we could just do it for $1 million on CGI. And he's like, can we not do that?
We say that, put that money into the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good show.
They still can't.
Or in really good guest stars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or anything.
Which they did. With Hendrix.
Mm. My favorite episode was the one where Jane was a hero.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Mutters Milk.
I really like the sword fighting episode.
That is a good episode.
I didn't like that one.
I thought it was funny.
I thought I loved the mechanic in that episode. She was fantastic.
Kaylee?
I've only watched the first 20 minutes of the pilot.
You should watch everything.
You should watch the rest.
You're not seeing the best of that.
Because it does build. I mean, I was not sold after the pilot episode. And I was like, oh, the second episode's a little better, but it's probably like Star Trek. It has huge ups and downs.
Well,
but no, it just continually gets better.
But I'm also, sure let's say, like,
the amount of his third season.
Well, I'm just saying, like, the amount of shows that you watch where, like, after going back and watching the first season, you're like, ooh, a lot of stuff I like isn't there. They had to get to that point. You need to develop it. You need time to breathe.
It's true.
We're like, I think the Tick live action series would have gotten phenomenal.
I don't know, man. They just stayed in the apartment.
Yeah. Oh, they had no money. They were given no money.
Well, regardless, what are you doing, Liam?
I'm rereading Ursula K. Le Guin's The Dispossessed, maybe my favorite science fiction book ever written.
Oh, okay. Wow. I have a lot to say about her when it's my turn.
Did we have this discussion last week?
No, because I hadn't started it yet.
Oh, okay.
What did you start?
I finished The Left Hand of Darkness.
Okay. Yeah, no, The Dispossessed I love just because it's a breakdown of like the situations in which it's a big allegory for anarchism, capitalism, communism, and then a weird secondary shadow government that they never really talk about that might be fascism, but it's only kind of alluded to.
Interesting.
And it talks about the situations and when they flourish and also their negatives. And you kind of come out of all of it saying like, oh, and everybody sucks. And no one really understands how the universe works or how things are really going. And it's a big...
It's like we all
fuck you to everyone.
We all have the same tools, and we're all making the same time decisions.
We are all the same tools.
I really like that.
I'll probably want to read that.
It's my favorite book she's written that I've read, and honestly, again, one of my favorite science fiction books. It's done really well.
She is so gifted with emotional language. I was absolutely blown away. But before I get to mine, what about you, Doug?
I finished 1984.
Oh, okay.
How do you feel?
Yeah, how you been feeling the past couple of days?
Do we need a suicide watch?
No, it did. Like I could have guessed how it ended just from again through just pop culture and you know knowing that it wasn't going to be a happy ending. And then when I finished it, I was like, oh yeah, it's a bummer, but you know it's not going to like ruin my day or anything. And then like later,
the next day.
No. Mm-hmm. Then like later, I was like, I had to go pick up my wife somewhere, and I just snapped at it for no reason. And I'm like, oh, no. I'm sorry. It's not you. I just read a bummer book. And I realized it totally did affect me, I was just like...
It's amazing how that book makes its point without you realizing it.
Yeah. Well, and not even just like, oh, it's a bummer because what happens, but more of just like, just the implicate, like how it unfolded, and you know,
and how it destroys that little part of yourself. That
and I want to talk about more about that because we're going to do good endings on this podcast, and that is that's top five. I mean, like it's super appropriate. Like, Liam, you had more to say.
Yeah, I also want to say I've been watching more Masters of None.
Aziz Ansari.
Oh man, there are two or three episodes where you're like, oh shit, it's really good. Second tier to Louis.
Oh, okay.
For me now.
And you said it's very similar to Louis. It's like a proto Louis.
Yeah. I mean, well, the whole thing is it just feels really influenced by Woody Allen in the way it's shot and kind of paced. And again, everything is a love story to New York and kind of what you can do in New York.
There was a third character in this story.
It
New
was
York.
The city in New York. but that's really it's really true in Louis, and it's really true in this.
I restarted
Let's do this.
Kimmy Schmidt. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I like it.
I love that show.
I mean,
so
it's ridiculous, but I love it.
It's the only show that really shows New York how like moving to New York is.
Especially her roommate is amazing.
But, like, you get a closet and you're paying.
I like that show because the first time I saw her in that show, I was like, I know her from something, and then I figured out what it was. She's in a Derek comedy sketch where she's in the blowjob sketch.
Oh yeah, that is
her. She's the blowjob girl, and I was like, I know who that is. I know, and then I watched, and I was like,
she's so dry.
Is that where she's like, oh yeah, with the teeth,
and she's chomping, and he's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that to anyone.
As for me, I've been slogging my way through Deep Space Nine. I saw a pretty good episode. I'm still in season three, and from what I can tell, season four is where it really opens up. But I just finished The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin, that Liam's read the same author. She's amazing. I like Left Hand of Darkness, for you guys that don't know, is about an envoy from a federation of planets who goes alone to a planet to just invite them and answer all their questions. Mm-hmm. And there's no pressure or anything like that. But it's from that envoy's perspective and from the perspective of like the vice president or like a viceroy, an advisor, like the top advisor of one of the nations. Like it's basically each of their journals. It's one of the most emotional books I've ever read in my life. And she has a way with emotional language I've never read in any kind of story before. And not in ways that are like bad things happen, because bad things do happen, but it's very much like the... do you guys ever see the movie Enemy Mine?
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't.
It's very good.
It's very good. It's about a human and an alien who were enemies who are forced to survive together. Otherwise, they both die.
Like they both crash on this planet.
Space one.
It's fantastic. It's a really good movie. I highly recommend it. But in this book... they're not enemies, but at some point the main character gets put in like a concentration camp by a different faction, and the vice chancellor or whatever, Estevan, rescues him, and they have 80 days worth of ice to go across to get back home during winter, and it's just about them surviving this 80 days from like the midpoint of the book on. It's about that. Mm-hmm. And it is so emotional and real and difficult. It's very good. I don't know any other ways to say it without like giving away the heart of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's in this planet. I guess I forget to mention, because against the friendship aspect of it, it doesn't seem that important. The main difference with this planet is that nobody has a sex. They have a period of time every month where they become one sex or the other. They become male or female. It's the only difference that they have from the other humans. But they still are human. And the author does really interesting ways of reconfirming that by having like little dialogue or moments where you're like, oh, where the envoy is like, oh, these people have the same sensibilities that we do about these kind of things. Like, there's a point where the king of one of the nations that the envoy just came from, he was pregnant, and they're making fun of him because he's too old and it's like risky and you shouldn't get pregnant that old. And the king gives birth, and news comes through while everybody's eating lunch that the child died. And one of the guys raises a glass. He's like, may all kings of Karhide live so long. And then, like, it said some joined in the toast. Most didn't. And then one spit. He's like one spits. And he's like, mesh his name to laugh at the death of a child. You know, like, just how can you?
Yeah.
And then when you see that king again later, it's like he looked like a mother who had lost a child or a father who had lost a son. He was a changed person completely. So all the things that the main character explains at the beginning of the book that are different about these people don't matter by the end. They're all still human. Everything still matters. And you would think that she's trying to set up like a utopian society, saying
differentiating genders, but it's not.
Not at all. I mean, there's one point they've never gone to war. There's never been a war on on Winter, the planet Winter. And the main character speculates is because there's no sex. It's harder to rally people. It's harder to do this. And then once the main character is out in the snow alone, he's like, oh, this is probably the reason. It is so cold.
And then, like, if you know, if Earth Wars have taught us anything, you know,
no one fights in the winter.
Yeah, yeah, fighting in the snow in the winter is awful. So that might be the main reason. But you never get the answer. I don't have enough good things to say about that book. I highly recommend it.
I'm really happy because when you were like, oh, I have some stuff to say about Ursula K. Le Guin, generally when people say that, they immediately go like, feminazi.
Oh, no. I mean,
there are a lot of sci-fi guys who despise her.
Really?
Well, women doing things is just not what I want in my sci-fi, you know?
I think
the main character is a man, and nobody else is a man or a woman.
Yeah. make a man pregnant.
She beat out someone for a Hugo
Award
once.
Kind of point you're trying to make.
Yeah.
And they were, like, they fumed.
If it's anything like this book, she deserved it.
Yeah.
She's an amazing author. And she just lets women do things alongside men. And a lot of the basement dwellers are like, nah, yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
I can't stress enough. If you like Enemy Mine, read Left Hand of Darkness. It is hand in hand with that. I mean, there's several points in the book where I get choked up. Not even because anything bad or good happened. It's just like, it really peels apart like the nature of friendship and like what that can mean between two people who genuinely like really love each other, but not in a romantic way. All right. As for our topic this week, I want to talk about primarily books, because we can do film and television later. Mm-hmm. Books with good endings, and when I say good, I don't mean happy. I mean appropriate endings, ones that really stick it to you or make the book's point, or I don't know, just leave you with a completed feeling. So, what about you guys? What books do you think have the best endings?
So, we're going to talk about 1984 now.
Yeah, let's start with 1984. I think that's a good place to start.
I mean, what can you say about it?
This is going to be a very spoilerific
episode.
We're going
to dig deep.
Well, why don't we list the books first?
Nobody listen for like the next 10 minutes.
Let's list the books with good endings.
A Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones isn't over. You mean the first book, the book Game of Thrones
of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Okay.
That's got a solid ending.
It's got it hits you hard, but it doesn't. I don't know if I would agree that it, like, makes its point. You know what I mean? Like,
I totally disagree.
I almost say that there's a moment that happens that sets the tone for the entire book series.
Yeah,
fair enough. More than
any other moment. And I think it's really important, and it's a good ending.
No, I would argue that point as well.
So if that's all he published, mm-hmm. that would still be a good book.
Mm-hmm. So I would say 1984, like you said.
Yes.
I would say Cat's Cradle.
Yes.
Yeah, Cat's Cradle is a nice.
Yeah, Cat's Cradle has a great ending, as well as
Forever War.
The Forever War.
We've talked about it every.
Yeah,
episode.
Every episode we've talked about.
Old Man's War, I would say.
Old Man's War is the ending's okay. I mean, because I'm comparing it against the Forever War, and the Forever War, man, it's a knockout.
Just don't do that.
We're doing a lot of sci-fi and stuff. Let's go a little classic. Hamlet. I think Hamlet's ending is great.
Yeah, Hamlet's wonderful.
I don't even think that counts.
I would like to talk about that as a really good ending, and I almost think a lot of the things that work in Hamlet's ending are the things that we like in those other endings.
One that we talked about.
Can we just
about,
say Shakespeare?
Most Shakespeare
most
really
Shakespeare,
wraps up.
Yeah.
He puts a pretty nice
gory Romeo and Juliet.
Bow
I got
on
it.
Yeah.
To go from Shakespeare, I got two from Arthur Miller, Death of a Salesman and The Crucible.
The Crucible.
Both.
Yeah, it's like, leave me my name! Yeah, it's so good. As far as fantasy, Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman.
Oh,
phenomenal
yes.
ending. I mean, just
I
so good.
Love it
also,
so
American Gods ends pretty good, too.
It ends pretty good, but Neverwhere it really does. It's the perfect ending. Because I've noticed something about good endings is that it's not about the problem that they went through or anything like that. They've already solved that by the end of the book. But the ending is the thing where they reconnect with the people in it on a new level. So, like, the ending, if you were watching the movie Rocky, it's not about him losing to Apollo Creed or going the distance. It's about the end. Adrian decides to come back.
All he wants is Adrian at that point.
Yeah. And like, he gets it. Yeah. And they get each other. That's the ending. Forever War, same thing.
And I think the reason why that works, too, is Rocky loses, but he doesn't lose.
Yeah,
he loses the distance.
He loses the fight, but he gets the respect that he wanted.
And more importantly, at the end, Apollo's like, let's never do this again until the next movie.
Where they say,
I want a rematch.
Yeah, they're saying it's called me a phony, called me a fake, saying I'll do the fight.
Rocky 2 is a great film, too. Rocky 2 is amazing.
Watchmen.
Oh, fuck. We have to talk about Watchmen.
Again?
Watchmen has a great ending.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
Alan Moore has a history of that. Like, do any of you guys read The Courtyard?
No.
The Courtyard wraps up with a beautiful bow. I mean, it's horrific, but it is exactly what you expect it to be. It's exactly what it needs to be to end.
Rendezvous with Rama, I felt like had, to me, it's like the reveal. I mean, are we talking spoilers now? Are we still gonna save that?
See, I don't know. let's do that in a second. Okay. I'm gonna say I think that Rendezvous with Rama is a better book, but I think that Childhood's End has a better ending.
I could see that. It's tough to call when you say one's a better book and one has a better ending. So it's like, how can that work? You know, but
when you look at the endings and like how they wrap up, you're like, oh, that's the point it was trying to make.
Right. Yeah.
So are we still only just talking about books? Because I do want to bring up one ending.
Okay, go ahead.
I think Cowboy Bebop.
The movie or the show?
No, the show.
I liked it. Here's the thing. Here's the reason why I didn't want to talk about movies is I think that movies generally are better at this.
Oh,
I think movies.
Well, because you get an image.
Yeah. Well,
and an image is nice to end on.
And it's 2 hours, and you've got, and generally the ending is factored into the beginning because it's not so internal.
It's very self-encapsulated.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Whereas books can kind of meander, and the ending can just be a thought somebody has.
Yeah.
So let's get into spoiler territory because I think we've beaten this to death a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about 1984 first because I think that all comes to mind here. And the last line of that book is I loved Big Brother.
Yeah.
And which is
a complete reversal.
A complete reversal of everything.
From the very beginning, he's writing now, I hated him. I hate Big Brother. You know, I hate the party. And then completely flips.
It is so much like The Godfather in that respect, where the end, the last line
is the
exact opposite of what happens.
Do we got to bring The Godfather back into the perfect ending?
Yeah, it's not.
No, because it's a movie. And I do kind of want to stick to
discuss
literature.
Discuss on the books first.
Yeah. So,
But I would almost say even the lead up into that ending, I Love Big Brother, the moment when he gives up his love, the moment that the thing is supposed to be the most precious, the most human, the thing that will be the last thing that you give up to someone else or to any of your power. As soon as he does that, I'm like, my chest hurt.
It's awful.
It hurt.
The reason why I think that's not what makes it a good ending is because you think that presumably he might be killed immediately after this.
Yes.
When you're reading it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they let him live.
Well, here's the thing. I knew that he was going to betray her. What I wasn't prepared for was that in the moment when he betrays her, I completely understood why.
Oh, it's horrible.
Because of all the stuff they put him through. Because I'm like, how could he ever? He's like, he would never betray Julie. He would never want to do that. I'm like, yeah, you stick with it, man. And the worst
is the guy gives him an out beforehand.
Yeah.
He's like, what's about to happen isn't your fault.
Yeah.
You will betray her.
Yeah.
And you can't be blamed for betraying her the same way that a man who's falling off a building can't be blamed for grasping for a rope.
Yeah.
Like it's not it is completely outside of your control. And that makes it even more sad.
Right. because you completely see it. Like you don't step away from the coin. Why did he do that? Like, no, you get it.
You know exactly why. And
that is a perfect book.
Yeah.
Like
and,
from start
and more
to finish.
Importantly, you look inside yourself in that moment, and you're like, I could do no better. I could only do worse.
As far as perfect books goes, 1984 is there, and I think the only one that we mentioned, where is in whole, the point is made at the end of the book that was the entire point of reading the book, is Cat's Cradle. I think it's the only one that holds up to that kind of scrutiny.
If you want to talk about the ending of the book being the whole reason for reading it,
Cat's Cradle
is
perfect.
Cat's Cradle is phenomenal. I mean, just the fact that you – for me, it was the moment when I finished the book, and I closed it, and then I went – oh, and I looked at the book
as
in my
whole
hands.
And the way it the was in...
Well, no, I mean, the physical book in my hands. I was like, oh, that's what this is. Like, this is that thing. Like, that. Oh, excellent. I understand completely.
1984, though, it moves. Like, the entire time, I was thinking, all right, are we going to slow down here? It's like, on to the next thing.
I don't mean it slogs into a slow book.
I think the first the first half of that book is slow. When it's just like, I was talking to the proles, and I did this, and
yeah,
I was this
the
woman,
beginning,
and I didn't
the
know.
Yeah, the beginning was the hardest part to sit through. Not even that it was hard, but just like, comparatively, the beginning was the toughest part, because you're just like, all right, I get it, everything's terrible, where are we going? But then as soon as he's just like, suspecting this girl, and then as soon as she drops the note, from that point on, it just changes like, you know.
It's wonderful. There's that one, and I think
Aldous Huxley?
Brave New World?
Brave New World, thank you.
Yeah.
The ending of that book is good. But it would be way better if the book was from that character's perspective.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the problem with that book, is that it's from a character, it's from several characters' perspective, none of which is the character who hangs himself at the end.
On the topic of, you say like, oh, certain books, you don't have to end with an image, you can end with a thought. That's why I really liked Rendezvous with Rama's ending. Mm-hmm. Like everything leading up to the ending was just kind of normal.
Yeah, sorry, I see what you're saying. Go ahead.
Because to me, the thing that made that ending wasn't physically what happened or how the plot got resolved or the fact that this thing. I mean, it was great.
Or that they had an orgy.
Yeah, no, I'm like, what the fuck is with all these sci-fi in space orgy thing? But whatever, it's the 60s, I guess. I don't know. The thing about the ending is not just that you get to see the alien craft do this amazing alien thing and then you kind of get an understanding of what it's doing, where it's going. Like, you, all of that comes through and you're like, oh, I think I understand now what's really going on. Boom, the thing is gone. And you're like, okay, I think that's the point. I get it. I think that's it. Then orgy shit or whatever happens. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, this book's going on for a little bit. But then the final thought was when he goes, where it's like, oh, he laments that we'll never get another shot to see it. And he goes, oh, wait, everything that did happens in threes. And then literally, boom, that's the end. That's the end of the book. And you're like, oh, shit. Like, so it was, you had a revelation about what these aliens were doing. And just when you thought it was over, you had another revelation that was obvious the entire time that you just didn't think about.
It's funny you say that because when you said it's the thought at the end of the book, that's not what I thought you were thinking of. What
did you think I was thinking of?
What I thought was the point you were making, that the book was making, is that when this alien does this great thing and pulls an assist off of our sun and gathers all the energy and just rockets out of our solar system, it's like, we're not important.
No, that too. No, that's the big revelation where you're like, oh, that's the end of the book. That logically makes sense. I get it. That's a whole story.
It's like they're not even going to remember that they came through here.
Yeah, yeah.
like we everything we did and then all the political shit we went through to even see
doesn't
the inside
even
of this
matter.
Place.
Yeah,
we're just a pit stop.
Yeah.
On their wherever they're going.
I tell it to my students every day that they're not
nothing.
Special snowflakes.
Well, they're not important.
This is just a pit stop.
Oh no! You know what they found out? There are identical snowflakes. I love folksy wisdom that is just completely and utterly wrong if
like
you,
you
think
can,
about it for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Well, like how you can see the Great Wall of China from space.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, Liam, if you're ever going to become a father, while your spouse or whomever is pregnant, you're going to hear a lot of bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's
a
lot of...
But more the snowflake, not that they're separate, but just that they're going to melt within seconds and be insignificant. But for my ending, I... Like the original Planet of the Apes, the book, the French.
No, that's a solid ending.
You are 100% right.
I thought that was a beautiful ending because I didn't, you know, I read it outside of the movies.
You don't see it coming.
I saw the movie first. That luckily was not spoiled for me when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. That was the single hardest hitting ending of any movie I ever saw.
Oh, definitely.
While I was there.
All right.
And just great sci-fi.
It's wonderful. I mean, and it counts because it was a book.
Well, yeah. I think Liam hit on a thing that was interesting is that there's a lot of twist endings now.
Yeah,
because it's almost like, oh, a twist ending, therefore is a good ending.
No.
Although, Sixth Sense, everybody shits on...
Shyamalan?
Yeah, Shyamalan
M. Night,
Ding Dong.
M. Night.
Yeah.
But...
It's a good ending.
Sixth Sense is a great
Sixth
ending.
Sixth Sense has a great ending.
On a rewatch, makes sense.
I hated the village.
And there's been a couple like debunking, breaking the rules, where like, how did Bruce Willis not know he was a ghost the whole time?
Who cares?
Gives a shit about ghost logic.
And you know why that doesn't matter? Because Haley Joel Osment says that sometimes they don't know they're dead.
Yeah. Which again,
it. Incognito? And Liam, you read that. Doug, you read that.
I didn't finish it.
Oh shit!
I am two issues away.
The ending is good, but there's a moment where the main character is always struggling with the fact that he has a twin brother, and the girl that they were both into chose his brother over him.
This isn't even the end.
No, it's not. Yeah. But it's what makes the ending great.
Yeah.
Also, you can ruin this ending for me. I don't give a shit.
No, you should, because the book is fantastic. And she's dying. The lady's dying, and she's like, "You want to know how I chose you, your brother,
chose
over
him,
you?"
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, "I don't know how it happened." She goes, "I flipped a coin." He goes, "You fucking bitch."
Because he loved her.
Yeah, he loved her, and it ruined his life. Yeah. So it's great. It's amazing.
What else?
Watchmen. The ending of the Watchmen comic, the ending of the movie, I've had people say, oh, no, that was good. That was good.
It's solid.
That was good. You know, it's not good.
It was a movie and it ended.
It is logical. It makes sense.
It did its job.
It did what it was supposed to do. It wrapped up the problems that the end of the book wrapped up. However, it was not as good as the end of the book. The book is phenomenal. The giant conspiracy that Ozymandias sets up in the end of Watchmen is so amazing compared to the end of the film. The end of the film is just like, oh, blame this guy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Although it's a little more elegant because they want to, one, you get the understanding they want to blame him to begin with.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's still America's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Adaptations, after teaching history, I kind of give adaptations of things a break because it's like, here's something you think is really interesting. Make it for 90 million people who don't give a shit.
Well, okay.
You know?
So
Watchmen
so,
is not a bad movie.
No, but I'm saying
it's just not the
to
comic
hold it
book.
To the standard.
It is
of
nothing
the,
like the
the
comic
great,
book. Even
one
the,
of the greatest
the premise
comic
is
books.
Different.
If you don't know the comic book, it's not a very good movie. Because I've talked to people who've
seen, they're like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. To you, it's not a great movie.
No. He's talking to people who have no idea about the comic.
The only thing is, I enjoyed it. And my complaints are, they're minor, nitpicky, and I get why.
Well, the thing is, I understand why people who never read the comic don't understand the film, because no character in the film is relatable. And when you tell them that in the comic, every character was over 40 and like middle aged and pot bellied, they're like, oh yeah, that would have been better.
Yeah,
that would have made more sense.
That's my main complaint is the second Night Owl looking in his costume and he's got a belly that you can see past his arms.
Yeah.
And he's just sad. And then they do that exact same frame.
Oh, and he's beautiful. In the movie. He's gorgeous.
And if I looked half as good as that.
Yeah.
The
whole thing is, and there's a little bit of a gut, but you can still.
Dude, this guy has the most toned ass I've ever seen on a human. other than Wolverine in Days of Future Past.
Or Dr. Manhattan.
His back looks amazing. Yeah. He looks in terrific shape. Like, and then the next time you see him, he's just killing people.
Yeah, I've been doing deadlifts and rows for about 2 years now, and my back is nowhere close to what that guy's looks like.
He was, you know, he's movie fat. Like, I had to watch The Devil Wears Prada for a class the other day a couple times. And Anne Hathaway's in it. Anne Hathaway.
And they're like, she's frumpy. And she weighs
like 100 pounds.
And you're like, she's Anne Hathaway.
I know I'm a big fatty, but you guys should still listen to me. I'm like, this whole premise can go.
I could throw her like a javelin.
That is definitely a weird thing that movies do where, like, she's unattractive. And then I look at her, it's like, if she was at a party, she would be the second most attractive woman there without trying.
She could be a part-time model.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like...
Yeah, top of the food
top
chain.
Top tier. Anywhere, really. She's Anne Hathaway. Fuck off. But I was going to say, reading comics, like 300, if you read the comic, it is a great story and a totally believable story. But the movie they made?
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Because it's supposed to be a dude psyching up a bunch of other dudes telling a great story about what just happened.
Yeah.
Like elephants. You never seen an elephant before? They're like 50
they're
feet
monsters.
Tall.
They're monsters.
They've got 18 tusks. They shoot fire. And the bad guys, oh, yeah, they're ninja ogres, and you can't tell. It's like you're supposed to be psyching
them. And when you kill them, they rise from the grave, and you have to kill them
but
again.
Our king killed them. Our 300 killed them. Like, that's the whole point of the thing. And then that movie, they're like, oh, these cool guys with no shirts on just kicked ass.
So I think what makes a good ending, as far as what we would consider a good ending, is not so much whether or not they win.
No,
they could lose 100% like in Cat's Cradle and Watchmen.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the endings that we said were good endings were losses.
Right.
Because I think that's the author telling the truth. They're not
there are wins. Neverwhere is a win. But to spoil the end of Neverwhere.
Yeah.
The guy helps out with this problem of this magical.
I just love that story so much. Yeah.
The end, he helps this magical group of people that live in a invisible magical portion of London solve all their problems, and then he's like, "Okay, I'm going to go back to my regular life." And then he goes back to his regular life, and it sucks. And his wife is a piece of shit.
He got everything he wanted.
Yeah, he got everything he wanted, the entire time. And he's like, this isn't enough for me anymore. This isn't enough. And he struggles with it for, like, days and days and days. He gets so frustrated with everything in his life. The only relic he has is, like, this knife that he left with him. And he's like, you know what? Screw this. And he gets drunk and goes in an alley, and everybody in his life hates him because now he's not acting like himself anymore. And he draws, like in Beetlejuice, with the knife, he scratches an insignia of a door on the wall of an alley and draws the thing. And he's like, I think that's how it went. Fuck it. And nothing happens. And he's like, ah, god damn it. Fine. And he just falls asleep in like the garbage. And then he wakes up and the door is open. And one of the guys who's, it's the Marquis. The Marquis. I forgot.
Because it had to be open from the other side.
Right. Yeah. Is standing in the open doorway looking at him. He's like, you coming or what? And that's the end of the book. Like, it's fantastic.
Boom, great ending. I love it.
It doesn't need to be a downer, but it just needs to fit with the rest of the
story. No. It needs to be honest to what you set out to do.
And it can't be pandering. Yeah. You can't pander. Feels bad.
One of my students the other day had a new book by the author of The Hatchet, Paulson. Mm-hmm. Did you guys read The Hatchet when you were younger? It's about a kid who gets...
I read Brian's Winter, too.
Yeah, he gets in a plane crash, and he's got to survive and everything, and then he gets away. And then the kid showed me the book. He's like, oh, yeah, they did another one. I'm like, why? So I look through it, and the author is like, yeah, I got a lot of shit for the ending. So if you like the ending, don't read this. But if you didn't like the ending, here's an entirely new book of
Dark Tower that we talked about. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm like, that's an interesting thing to do. But I think what we like is our author... here's how he set out. He's being true not to what you want, to how he is putting the story through.
Oh, well, and the book.
Like the ending of Harry Potter.
Yeah, the book, the last.
True to what was there, it was good.
The Last Samurai. If you guys ever get a chance to read it, I highly recommend it. The end is just
the Last
like that.
Samurai.
It's
book,
fantastic.
Not the movie.
No, not the movie because they're different. They're completely different stories, but the movie is good too. I
Ken Watanabe was badass in that.
Everybody was badass in that movie. Yeah. I love that movie.
The book is not
the Last Samurai has nothing. The book has nothing to do with the movie.
It's just a coincidental.
It's a coincidental title. It's about a woman raising her genius son in London, modern day. It's my favorite book, but the ending is great.
It's still in my top five.
Yeah, it's very very good.
That was the first book you made me read.
Yeah,
where you were like, take this.
Would you believe that everybody else that I handed that book to hated it?
Yes. No, I could. If you don't like reading books, and the whole thing is, I hadn't even seen The Last Samurai or The Seven Samurai, the movie. As soon as they started bringing it up, I put that book down and then watched the movie and then put that book up again. And I was like, shit, this is amazing.
Yeah, was the book that much better because you just watched that?
Yes.
No, Seven Samurai he's talking about. The book references Seven Samurai. Okay, so here's the break.
Oh,
it's so good. I hadn't seen the movie. He gave me this book,
and just keep that for an adaptation podcast one day, and not talk about the Seven Samurai right now.
Well. The idea is the book, The Last Samurai, references Seven Samurai because it's the mother's favorite film, and the child grows up fatherless, and she's like, well, he won't have a positive male role model, so she makes him watch Seven Samurai so that he'll have seven, right? But they're not all positive.
Yeah, they're.
But all he wants to know is
they're mostly positive.
Yeah, not all of them though.
For feudal Japan, I guess.
Yeah. So the only thing he wants to know is who his real father is. He can't find out. He goes digging through her past and asking her like detective style questions when he's like 12, and he finds out that there are seven possible men who could be his real father. And then he goes through and meets all of them one by one and tells each one of them that he's their son.
Does he do it in a contest?
No, he doesn't do it in a contest, but he does. He definitely does put them into. This kid's a genius, by the way.
In the
book,
is them?
Oh, and
he puts himself
he's
in great.
As smart or smarter than all of them.
Yeah, and he's amazing. So it's the best book I've ever read.
Don't tell me the ending. Then.
I'm not going to tell you the ending, but it's very good.
I want to read it.
Oh, it's near perfect.
And again, it's after the problem or whatever is solved.
Oh yeah, it's resolved. It doesn't. In fact, the problem is resolved. 75% way through.
No. He doesn't find out the answer to his question until very near the end. But there's characters he meets. Like the best parts of that book are even before that, where
some of the people stops mattering.
Yeah,
too.
Like, kind of like High Fidelity, where you stop caring about his problems, but you're just fun along for the ride.
No. I don't agree because
you care about him, and I also disagree on High Fidelity. So fuck you. Which I also think has a really great ending.
I hate that film.
You made
me watch it at your house with
you,
and I'm like, this is just a movie about an asshole getting what he wants.
No, he doesn't get what he wants.
I stop caring about him.
I hate this film.
And I just enjoy the ride and Jack Black and the other guy. What's his name?
John Cusack?
No, little dude who looks like Moby.
I don't know the actor's name, but he's Barry and Dick.
They make stiff little fingers jokes.
All right, so now we're going to talk about our own work. Each of us brought in something to critique or workshop or work with each other on. Each writer is going to introduce what they brought.
All right.
And then we're gonna talk about it. So, Liam, what'd you bring?
I brought in my goblin PI story. And it's just about a goblin who's unnaturally tall. And I didn't mention in this story, but he's like 5'2".
Oh, he's 5'2". Okay.
He's 5'2".
So tell us about that world that he lives in.
He lives in a weird world, which is like pseudo 1940s America. It's after 100 years of war on the continent, and it's supposed to be in England. All the underground creatures have American accents, and everyone who lives above has English accents. And I didn't quite get to that, but there's a lot of world building involved, and me and Max have actually been doing this for maybe a year and a half.
Okay, so you guys have been working on this for a while. Is this something that you're going to come back to us with?
Oh, yes.
After this? Okay. Okay, awesome.
That's a world we actually really love.
Yes.
Because it feels kind of like, when I was reading it, feels kind of like the Dresden Files, where it's in that same kind of gumshoe fantasy world.
It's very much a fantasy noir thing, and I didn't get everything I needed to in world building across in the first chapter.
It is really a world, though. It's not like there's a noir world. Right. It's more just happens in the world along with everything
it's,
else.
The whole thing is he's a private detective. It's the noir part of that world.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you feel like you need to add to the beginning, because the thing I loved about it was, like a detective noir story, it's completely from his perspective the entire time.
Yes.
And the only time that you need to give new information is when, oh, she's about to walk up to that level. Yeah. Let me tell you about that level real quick. Like, it's as if he's sitting across from me telling me the story.
But the whole thing is I want two perspectives from the story, and I want them the chapters to go one then the other. So I want it to be from the goblin's point of view, first chapter, second chapter would be hers.
Interesting.
And I came up with this idea later, because then you get a second point of view, and if you do that, you get to get rid of a lot of plot points that happen where he would already know things. He gets to explain stuff to her from her point of view, which I think is important when you find out his history.
Now, that's one thing I did want to talk about, because I wrote down a couple notes for you. I enjoyed the world that you're setting up here, and this did feel very experimental, like you're trying to play around in this world with this character.
Yes.
But I wrote down, since this is a detective story in the first person, I'd like a stronger voice as the narration. Since he's a goblin, there can be a lot of novel ways that this can be done. And I would also prefer more context before he sets off.
Mm-hmm.
He could talk about like his lousy day, or like how much he hates the bartender, or anything to familiarize us with his voice before you change the location.
Okay,
you know what I mean? Like where you understand
it just
like
goes.
This, yeah. Where you could give like little context clues that things aren't quite as normal. Like where you could use lingo that's in there, and use words that maybe we're familiar with, but only in a fantasy setting, mm-hmm. for things that are common to us.
I do want to bring up another thing. I want it to feel where, like, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, I almost want there to be moments where you're like, well, that was a hide check. But yeah. I don't want to say that.
I very much felt that this was
D&D.
I want
that vibe where if you're familiar with RPG settings, you can feel that in the narrative. But at the same time, if you're not, it doesn't take away from the narrative. And I feel like that's a weird balance to hit.
Now, I have a unique perspective on why this is a D&D setting. Because Doug played a character that was a goblin rogue that clearly has influenced this character a little bit.
Only though.
Right.
Well, we only played it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. And the main character, the goblin, references the Sword Coast Corsair, which is a paragon class you chose for a character that you were playing campaign.
No, she's a Red Coast.
Red Coast.
Is that not what I said?
No. You said Sword Coast.
Oh, it was Sword Coast. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Still, we can clearly see where it's lifted.
Yes.
Right. But I actually, as a fan of D&D, I enjoyed those references.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Max, what do you know, knowing this world?
I know the
better
world
than most people
quite well, and I really did enjoy the opening. I thought you described the underworld pretty well without bashing us over the head with the description.
Right.
But then we get to the second part, and I don't know.
And that's my huge problem.
I thought it was great that you're describing the separation of the two worlds.
I want it to be from her perspective, though. I think she'd do a better job of it.
No, I'll write that. But I'm reading this, and I know the world, and I don't know
what parts don't fit and do.
Because I know everything about the world, so I don't know what an outsider would look at it and be like, now, where are they? What now?
I think I only said part of this. I think one of the main problems with the way it's written now is that the voice for the narration is inconsistent.
It
becomes much more clinical later on.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it has a lot more slang and affectations that the main character has. And then later, it just becomes kind of short sentence structure. It's still like punchy, but it's not the voice of the main character.
It was written in chunks.
Right.
It comes off that way.
If you're doing first person, it needs to feel like, it really does need to feel like this person is a character who's trying to tell you something in a world that you're already familiar
with. And the dialogue and the prose can be part of that characterization.
Exactly.
And
I'm
missing out on that. Doug? Mm-hmm.
I would say I liked it. I really the whole freaking concept I love, obviously. I would
Doug's
say
Doug's Rogue is the one we're talking about.
Yeah. But me outside of it, all jokes aside, I would say don't be afraid to go further with, like, I don't want to say cheesier elements, but like more pulpy
genre conventions.
Yes, yeah. Dude, don't be afraid to go even further with that, because when I'm dealing with this fantasy world and I'm like trying to get my bearings in it, I can find the stereotypical stuff reliable to help me.
Or like an anchor.
Yeah, and where
like
it's like
a tall drink
because
of water.
I'm already changing it enough. Yeah. To the point where it's not a rote.
Right.
Because then when you say something like, oh, she had a bag of holding.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah,
along,
yeah.
along with
don't be afraid to like really go deep and then scale it back if you have to.
Yeah.
Because I was
if I'm gonna talk about anything, I want to talk to you guys about if you have any recommendations for the rules of the universe for me.
Oh, I think
that's going to be establishing rules for universe, how people should talk is a minor point of that. But I want to know if there's anything where you're like, point blank, don't do this, allow your characters to do this. How should magic work? Because that's a huge.
I wouldn't worry too much about how magic worked. I think rules are important for people.
Yeah.
my issue is I wouldn't take it too high. Like I wouldn't have them shift between planes or introduce gods.
No.
Not because those things aren't possible in this world, but because the story seems very grounded.
But in that kind of world,
which is what the appeal is.
The whole thing is I want gods and very highfalutin things to be involved in the past. The war was when terrible things happened, mm-hmm. and like the reason why the world is how it is because of the war, and there will be a little divinity involved in that. But since the war,
just
nothing.
If he's a detective, he has to use logic to solve problems. So there needs to be logic problems. It can't just be, they did some magic, mm-hmm. and then that solves it. It's like there needs to be a puzzle to it that makes sense. You can use magic, but as long as magic's not an excuse for when you don't have an answer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. As a detective, I think he would see through a lot of magic.
I mean, I thought the shoe thing was a pretty good. No,
I
like it.
I guess limiting the magic so you can't magic your way out of any situation.
Yeah.
Rules on the magic. So if he knows those rules, it's like, oh, you're a red coast mage, therefore you don't know this. So don't bullshit me. Like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not only feels like the pulp novel, but also pulls me into that universe where it's like, oh shit. So now,
like almost like Holmesian, where you're like, oh well, I found some powder here of you know, like
smells it, and he's like,
blue ochre, you know, and that's only like, used in this kind of spells. Who knows about that? And you question that kind of person.
There's no sulfur here. I know what this means.
Yes,
exactly.
Well, in this world, for us, like magic is not something that many people really understand. It's more like, was it like Marie Curie playing with
radiation?
I guess taking the mystery out of magic might
answer that. Yeah, because he's a detective. Like I would be like, his description of people and what they're doing, if his character was doing that, I'd be like, well, how can they know that? But him being a detective, I like that he has to pick things apart.
Well, that's his advantage.
The nice thing about having a detective story is that he doesn't have to know everything starting out. He can do research, which is a great way to explain to the audience a rule set. Because he's like, wait, what is this? And then he could go research it, and then it's explained
to
him.
I knew my friend Tom.
Tom knows about the mystery isn't in his world. It's more in the people in the world, and we only need to learn how parts of the world work when he's face to face with it.
And I feel like our religions, like our high religions, it's a lot of misdirection.
Oh, purposefully.
Yeah, because people don't know what the fuck's going on. Gods don't talk to them personally.
Specifically, what would you like to improve about this specific?
One point of view was something I definitely had in mind, but also I don't want it to be just from the
his
goblin's
perspective.
Point of view.
You want that? You
pretty
want the
badly.
The girl who's hiring him?
Because I especially want to be able to describe the underworld and its differences from another point of view. Because he wouldn't give a shit.
Right.
He's never gonna really describe to you the ins and outs of how that works. Ever.
Well, I mean, I enjoy the world. Obviously, this is not a complete story.
Not even a little bit.
Well, I mean, it doesn't reach resolution even in the sample that you gave us.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in seeing more of it.
But I know I need more gumshoe elements. I definitely need, again, more logic puzzles. But it's also really important to me that the war hangs heavy over everything.
I would like a lot of people other than him to mention it.
Yeah.
Because right now he's the only agent of explaining the past.
Like action of a dice roll? To where like...
No.
No, I just mean...
Like...
No, I mean like where he's in a shadow. Where he actually pulls himself into a shadow to get smaller. That kind of thing of, like you said... Where you could see an action was a dice roll. I would like to see more of the actual action of him being a sleuth.
I think that has to be very subtle.
Yeah,
I agree.
Like,
I believe you can do that. But
I'm saying, I think at the level I'm at, where if you're like, he's making a hide roll, he's making a listen roll, I already think I'm there with that.
Okay.
Well, I want to see more.
All right.
So can you give me more next week?
Yeah, definitely.
No. No, I can't. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm sorry, guys.
Who's your next character?
That's Liam's way of saying yes.
I know I want an orc really badly.
No, I mean from the party that you wanted to show.
I would really like Captain Victor Sid.
He can't be in it. Can Yon
Pilgrim be a witness?
but the whole thing
What about Captain Deben Post?
Yes. Actually, that could work.
We're talking about all D&D characters.
The only thing is, he'd be 35 at this point.
Right. Post-war.
I was going to say, I'm going to bring in...
Oh, that would be terrible. If he was in an actual world war, Jesus Christ.
I'll loan you...
This is a...
Now, I am sorry to have said that out loud, because now that adds, like, horrible amounts of world building to the war.
No.
Oh, boy.
Can I add that the world war is history from, let's say, 1066 to World War II?
Yeah, to 1940.
Happens in 100 years.
Okay.
That's the idea.
Save it, because I want to know more, but I want to know more within the context of story.
All right. I just want to say real quick, next week I'll bring in my compendium of The Spider.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
I have read a lot of The Spider.
Then I don't have to do it then. I was going to say, you need to read some of that shit, because I like cracking open the beginning of that.
I've read a lot of Dashiell Hammett. Yeah. I've read a lot of...
All right, never mind. Then you're already 10 steps ahead of me.
The Spider, Green Hornet, it's all the same.
Yeah.
Although Sam Spade is my favorite detective, even more than Philip Marlowe, even though Sam Spade has two...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Stories.
What about Doug? Doug's next.
Okay.
So Doug, you tell us what you brought in.
Yeah, I brought in an outline based off of the trailer idea that we made last week.
Which was the Planet Without Christmas.
The Planet Without Christmas.
And I'm so excited for this.
So there really isn't much that I added, because I was just really recapping the idea, trying to fine-tune what we had, and then I started from the beginning saying, okay, we know the basic beginning, we know the basic middle, we know the basic end. Now, what I attempted to do is in this outline is just flesh out Act 1, trying to make sense how does it get to the planet and everything else. The way I have it now, the things that I added is the opening sequence is going to be establishing that he's a little bit late. He's always running behind, and he makes a late delivery on a planet that's actually like... a capitalist wonderland where Christmas is big business, and Christmas is all over this planet, so you can see the extreme, you know, when he goes from one to the other. And he makes this late delivery, and they're just like, "No, man, you're like 6 minutes late. We're not paying for delivery, and we can't take that or whatever now." And he's like, "No, come on, man, come on, it's Christmas. You know, come on, I gotta go and see the wife and kids." And this guy's like, "All right, tell you what, we'll take the cargo, but we have a bunch of old decorations from last year that are no good, and we have a bunch of presents that are overstocked because we thought this thing would sell well. So you agree to take that without a disposal fee. We'll call it even." So he has a ship now full of Christmas decorations and Christmas toys that are going nowhere. So then he's like, okay.
Doug, I have to give a time.
Go ahead.
I have to give a time. Brilliant.
Brilliant. I ain't done yet, sir. Please hold all applause. Because what he does then is he has to load up this cargo ship. So he lands this massive ship. I say massive ship, but that doesn't actually tell you the size of it. It's not like the Nostromo or anything like that. But it's a large-ish ship. He's loading up all this cargo, and he gets like
the size of the Firefly.
Big as hell, or big as
a Serenity?
Yeah, big as Serenity, maybe even a little bit bigger.
It's not a Star Destroyer, is what you're saying.
No. It's a bigger, probably bigger than the Falcon, but you
okay.
know. Anyway, so he's loading it up, and it's taking time because it's a huge haul, and he gets a beep on his like little wrist device, and he's like, "Ah, shit." Opens it up, and it's his wife being like, "Honey, are you going to make it to dinner on time?" And he's just like, yeah, 1 second. You're thinking, is he going to get back to fucking dinner on time? He runs into the ship while like the things are still loading. He goes to like this kitchen table set up like steel thing. He sits like he quickly makes a microwave dinner in like 3 seconds, slaps it on a thing, and then slides into the seat because he's been delayed because he's loading up all that cargo that he shouldn't have because he's supposed to come home directly. And then I have this little hologram of it's like a live transmission conference call with his wife at home eating dinner, with his kids at home eating dinner. So he's sitting across from these hologram 2D hologram images of them, and he's acting like he's supposed to be there on time. He's like, "Hey, so yeah, what's going on?" They're like, "Hey, Dad, you know, like whatever." And he's just like, "So let's start eating." And they just have this you know, thing, which I'm realizing a lot, that probably having a psychological moment, that's probably because I spoke to my wife for 2 years through Skype for a very long time. anyway, so like he's having this long distance thing going on, and the ship automated starts to take off, starts to leave, and he before he left that planet, he's like, I wonder, with all that extra mass now on the ship that I was not calculated in my flight plan, is that going to put extra strain on the warp drive, or is that going to cause a problem? So he's sitting across from his wife, who's only seeing him one direction because it's, you know, a camera and everything like mm-hmm. that, and the rocket ship starts going warp speed to get back home, you know. It's like a 2-week trip or whatever to get back to Earth. And he's trying to play it cool in front of his wife, eating, being like, oh, no, everything's fine. I made the delivery. We're all fine. He's lying about how he was almost late and almost got fired and all this other shit. And then, like, your little monitor would go off. I'm thinking like artificial intelligent robot or something. But anyway, a little beacon starts to go off. He sees like a
little
meter.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, a little meter starts to rise of heat or temperature or whatever. And he's just like, oh, okay, keeping an eye on that while he's trying to play it cool in front of the family. And then finally, like, he has to, like, the humorous tension of the scene is that he's seeing that his ship is about to overheat, but he can't let her know that there's a trouble or that he has to slow down and this other stuff. But of course, finally, like something, you know, overheats and alarms go off, and his family's like, "What's that?" He's like, "Oh, that's fine. Don't worry about it." And you know, and it's not like a life or death. He's gonna explode, but he tells him he's gonna call him back, and he has to make the emergency landing on the planet.
So is he alone in the ship? Is he
that's,
a space
that's
trucker?
The thing. That's the thing.
I think that's a good idea.
I like that.
Yeah,
the
like,
idea that he'd be totally
him,
alone.
Like kind of like the space truckers from Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Space Trucker, the movie.
As I was exploring the idea, I thought, yeah, it him being alone kind of makes sense, but he needs to at least have an artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah. So one thing I didn't like about our thing is we actually had a part in where he's like screwing over other crew members to do this. By
right.
not getting home for Christmas.
But if
right.
he's solo, it makes yeah, I think like it makes better sense.
Yeah. Also, the other problem that I ran into is like, okay, he lands on this planet. I'm assuming it's a desert planet, but it doesn't have to be because I'm sick of desert planets.
No, snow planet is way better.
Snow planet can work just fine, but then they can't be farmers.
Planets have more than one biome.
Yeah, but whatever. It's
our planet does.
The way
yeah, and it's a small planet.
Mars, Venus, yeah. Jupiter, Saturn don't.
But the way I describe the world that they're in is I don't have it in front of me, but I believe I wrote it's a sleek, colorful, sci-fi future as if designed by Frank Lloyd Wright and the Disney Imagineering team.
Okay.
So definitely like
so
colorful
utopian.
So
yeah.
It looks beautiful, works shitty.
Mm. I wouldn't say works shitty.
It's
as cult- much
it's
as
culturally different.
Yeah,
what you're
Frank
saying.
Lloyd Wright's houses were always beautiful and never
I'd
stopped water from pouring into them.
A modern minimalist approach, very future of the 1960s, kind of Tomorrowland
yeah.
sort of feeling, mm. just so that you can not take it too seriously.
Okay,
you know, it's not dark, gritty, like whatever. It's definitely lighthearted.
It's
family
not
friendly.
Aliens,
right? It is not aliens. It's not Alien. I'm trying to think of the closest. I said it's Moon. Meets the Santa Claus.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I. That it feels like that so far.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of feedback to give you yet because I feel
not
like,
a lot of.
Yeah. There's not
there.
A lot of. But yeah. I'm. I feel like we're all on board.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We just need.
Like.
We just need
no,
more.
No. The big
In fact,
hurdle.
I am 5 minutes away from calling the Hallmark Channel. Really
but so before you do that, the big hurdle that I'd like your all your guys' input on is. What is the logical reason I can have this guy break into people's houses and leave gifts behind without appearing very douchey and presumptuous?
Well, they're having a hard time. Like
yeah.
if they're about to have a bad year, like a really bad year,
right?
And there's something stopped working, and they didn't have whatever, and they're not, and it's just going to be hard this year. And he can't get them extra supplies.
He has nothing on that ship.
All he's
right.
got are decorations and presents.
Right.
You know, like I think that's a great way for
I mean,
him
from,
to.
From his point of view. That's like, I want to give back to the people, and that does make sense. But, like, ethically, he's going to break into people's houses that don't even know he exists, and that even, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's but, like, it's just to brighten children's
the
day.
Of Christmas.
True.
Like, he's not,
it's
not
it's
hurting.
It's the same suspension
not,
of disbelief
he's not,
that Santa Claus enjoys.
He's not yeah. he's not destroying
no.
their property.
Right.
He's not stealing
But how would
anything.
You feel if a guy today literally snuck in your house and left you presents? And it was legitimately out of the kindness of his own heart.
Well, I think here's the thing. I think there needs to be a public display of him maybe getting the idea of Christmas and then a public problem where they like, oh, we can't have it. There's nothing we
got. That's where I was going to go was I was like, okay, if he's like, oh, let me explain what Christmas is. And the idea of Christmas starts to spread. And if the, like the town mayor or someone
like,
is like,
we can't
it's like, dude,
it.
You need to leave. Because
like,
now,
like, please stop.
Yeah, it's like, please stop. Because now you got the hopes up of all these kids. We can't afford to give them anything. All you did was make them miserable.
I think if there's a general hopefulness among people and they're like, oh, that sounds awesome, but we can't do it. I think then you're in the clear. I think there's no problem.
I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. And it also makes me want to make a movie about
America's on board with the concept of Santa Claus. Like, you don't have to convince watchers that Santa...
Well,
like,
you know,
did you see the Santa Claus?
Right, but that's already in a world where Santa Claus is established to have existed for a fact, and he's been doing it for centuries. So it's even the adults.
No, it's actually the opposite. No one believes in Santa Claus, and he's doing this, and
which
it works
is
out
the biggest
fine
flaw of that movie. Because if Santa Claus is legitimately delivering presents every year, how come adults don't go, where are these presents coming from? It's like the cops who are chasing him
because
down. They're like, oh, he thinks he's Santa.
Doug, magic.
I think you're in the clear. I don't think there's a conflict.
Yeah. No,
whatever.
I think you're overthinking Santa Claus.
Maybe, but the last thing I had was at the very end. The way it's going to end is he obviously makes the choice to stay on this planet, not forever, but just mm-hmm. for the season, to deliver these presents, and his reward for doing this is that
he dies.
No,
oh.
That
not on board anymore.
Yeah,
Christmas morning arrives, and he's like all freaking exhausted, like he barely did it in time because he's always late. But he finally pulled something off on time for once. And the Christmas miracle that he gets is that when he told his family that I make the decision, I can't make it for Christmas because these people need me, and he like shuts the thing off, sends the message. They spend their money to charter a direct flight, and they show up to spend Christmas with him, even though they don't have.
That's great. That's wonderful.
So I got to figure out the middle, the act two, basically before the midnight
also,
ride of going through.
Really, really go for McConaughey on this one. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think he's been the pilot of a spaceship enough times now.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't. No one has.
But my next hurdle is to figure out, because I know once he goes on the act three is that trip, the middle of the movie, after from the moment when he lands and he's trying to decide what he's going to do, that's what I got to figure out now. Like, what are the hurdles along the way to get to that point? But other than that, that's what I got.
We're behind it. We're behind it. I think we're go team Planet Without Christmas.
Because it just
oh
reminds
my God,
me
no.
of a door-to-door salesman, but a guy who has to go planet to planet and he gets to the next planet. Hey, does anybody want any brooms?
I gotta tell you,
the Planetary Authority's like, no.
After we recorded last week, and I was so happy with the idea that that's when I started to consider writing it full on. I go home, I tell my wife, we had this crazy idea. It was it's a sci-fi holiday movie, and it's called The Planet Without Christmas. And she goes, you mean every other planet in the universe? I'm like,
we've never been to another planet. How do we know they don't have Christmas?
Good point. Santa Claus versus the Martians, right? Santa Claus conquers the Martians.
Well, I mean, Curiosity didn't find any Christmas stuff.
Yeah, but it's a robot.
Okay.
Well, no. Time out. Robots can celebrate Christmas.
They can celebrate Christmas, but
they're
when a human...
be much, much more efficient at celebrating Christmas.
They do in Doctor Who.
Christmas is like a small part.
There's Santa robots at Christmas. Yeah.
There's Santa robots in Futurama. Love them.
Well, Max, let's move on.
There wasn't gonorrhea in the Americas till the Spanish got there. But there also wasn't Christmas.
But there was syphilis.
Take the good with the bad. Is that what you're saying?
So, Max.
Yes.
Tell us what you brought in this week.
Oh. I brought in a story I wrote.
I brought in gonorrhea for everybody.
I'm
much like Spain.
You brought in a 2.5-page joke.
All our listeners. I sat down.
Speaking of Christmas.
And I wrote this in a couple minutes. 20-something minutes or so.
Maybe. Really?
Yeah, I just sat down.
Really?
I had the idea and I just
you
sat down and
wrote
2.5
pages in 20 minutes.
It wasn't very long. It was longer because...
Fuck you.
Don't. If my wife would stop listening to this for like 10 seconds, it would have been shorter, but she kept talking to me. And I was just like, can I just write this? And she's like, just talking to me and showing me pictures on Facebook. And I'm like, I just want to write this story. It's in my head.
It's really important that I troll these guys.
Yeah. Why?
Can you stop complaining about your lovely wife?
Yes. No, she's great.
Who I enjoy.
But I was at a birthday dinner, and my little siblings were there, and they were checking a website to see if they were on the good list for Santa Claus because they are young children.
Wait, time. This is a thing?
Yeah.
Parents go on and determine beforehand?
No, it's what they couldn't figure out is that it automatically puts you on the good list no matter what. So then and there's a little icon.
I hate this already.
Yeah. But you write an email and you send it and then a little email pops up in his computer, but mm-hmm. it refreshes every 6 seconds. And they didn't realize this. So I went on my phone. I'm like, you guys are being bad. I'm going to write an email to Santa. So I wrote this long, like, I wrote in a notepad document, and I went and I titled it To Santa North Pole. And they're like, you can't do that. And I hit save, and I went to the desktop. And then that little icon pops up in his computer. I'm like, oh, sorry, it's already there. And they're like, no. So like, they're trying to delete it and go, how do we go back? And I'm like, can't. And then they said something.
Screenshot the desktop, delete the icon.
So I went, I went back in. I'm like, dear Santa, they're doing it again. I guess they're not getting any presents this year. So then the idea of Santa Claus was in my head. And then I thought of the CIA.
So then you ruined Christmas.
One of the things that drives me crazy is that I got an update to the Google Maps on my phone that says that, oh, it's the you can track Santa now, where he's going. I'm like, Santa hasn't delivered shit for me in decades.
Well, now maybe you'll watch now. See, he won't visit your house.
It's fine. Yeah, I'll be waiting with a gun.
I know.
That's why he doesn't come to your house anymore.
Yeah. I know exactly when Santa stopped visiting my house, and that's when my parents got a divorce.
Yeah, because Santa is pure traditional marriage.
Yeah, no.
If I've seen
as soon as my mom was gone, my dad was like, "Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna wait for the sales after Christmas. Are you guys cool with that?" And we're like, "We're fine."
Yeah, we're cool.
If I've seen a '90s movie, that's when you get two Christmases.
No, you don't.
That was the case with me. And my parents were divorced, but I was an only child. That's a big difference.
Me and my sister, a Christmas and a half, maybe if we were lucky.
I've been watching a lot of '90s.
We haven't really talked about what
Explain
your story
what,
is.
Yeah, what
My
is
story is about a CIA operative.
Is he a CIA operative?
So he references the company a lot.
Because I want him to be called. I want the organization to be called Grinch really badly.
No, I had him as a CIA. He could be
acronym.
Grinch. He was a CIA operative because he references the company. They work for the company, and they're all named after founding fathers, signers of the Declaration of Independence, Button Gwinnett. You know,
yeah, Button Gwinnett.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a robot that I blew up in Fallout.
Yes.
So this CIA operative, he goes to his black site somewhere in Eastern Europe.
It's in Eastern Europe?
But it's not actually there. You make a point of it not being actually there.
It's not actually there because...
You repeat the same line twice, which actually bothers me.
Yeah.
We're like, and it wasn't there. My only critique of in fact that entire story is which you need to like.
But he means
that
off
line.
The books.
It's a reference that it doesn't
off
exist.
Off the books would be
officially
a good
re- yeah.
Officially,
there.
Okay, officially doesn't exist. He pulls in and the guards are afraid of him because of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got
which is Flay Santa.
Well, he you don't know that yet. So
no, you yeah. I do know you, that. Main, I read the story.
Right. Your main character is the Roose Bolton of holidays.
Yes. So he gets in to his office. And he's checking his email and putting his suit coat away and everything and what he's supposed to do for the day. So he goes in, and instead of dealing with the regular client that his company deals with, he's got a special client to deal with.
Now, see, when you see you... Okay. No, I'll wait till you're done. I'm sorry.
Okay. So anyway, so he goes in with his partner, Gwinnett, who's been working longer than him.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes in, and then they start working with the client to get information on a terrorist that they need to get from. And this client has been there for a number of years.
Now you say terrorist. You never say terrorist.
No, they want
you
information
said, you say,
about a terrorist.
He's a really bad person.
Yeah.
Who does a lot of bad things.
No, but I'm saying like they never use the word terrorist when referring to the client.
Well, the other clients. This client, they would not refer. Yeah.
The client that they're beating up, they never refer to as a terrorist. They want
terrorist.
Information.
This was a point of issue for me because a client is somebody who employs you. And I think maybe the word you meant to use was asset?
No, I was going with client.
Okay, because I didn't really understand how this person was a client.
I think client...
I was using it as client ironically.
I think there's too much sarcasm in that.
Oh, well, I don't
to
know.
Be
yeah, it was confusing. I didn't know what you meant.
And again, like a lot like the a lot like the doesn't exist line.
Yeah.
If you use client wants the first time...
Mm-hmm.
And then you refer to his asset or something else, you would get the irony.
Yeah.
But you... continued to use it, and then it was reinforcing.
I was using
that
it more as like a euphemism because this guy enjoys beating up people he thinks are terrorists, but he is kind of sickened by what he's doing to this guy
because
he is the avatar of goodness in our world.
And, is he?
Well, that's how Santa is usually described.
Now, I thought this was a good idea for a story.
Oh, it's clever.
But then, so it finds out this guy got kidnapped by a special forces team a couple years ago. And they're like, tell us where this guy is. And he's like, how am I supposed to know? And they're like, fuck you.
You know
Santa
he's
Claus.
Naughty.
You know where he is. You know where everyone is at all times. You know what he's doing. So then they torture him, cutting out his face and burning out his eyeballs because that all grows back. And they've been doing this daily for 3 years. And Santa is so terrified that he just gives up the information because he's tired of being
Okay. No, I didn't get it. I didn't get that it grows back.
Well, I mentioned several times.
I didn't get that either.
Oh, I did. Because as soon as he cut him, it says that it started to grow back.
Yeah,
like, as soon as they do his eye, like they cut the side of his face, I think you said like it started to reconstruct or something. Like,
and then there's this part. Franklin looked deep into the old man's remaining eye as the other started a slow, horrifying reconstruction.
Oh, okay.
Because if I'm assuming Santa Claus being an immortal creature
is immortal,
right? If you melted his eye with a blowtorch, it would reconstruct.
Right.
Now, I think this is a great idea for a story, and the idea that you could use Santa's special ability of knowing, like, the list and checking it twice. And
that,
knowing
like, the CIA would do that.
Right, right. But one of the things about me that made this really hard to read was that I need a description of the characters when they're introduced. It doesn't even have to be...
And the whole joke rests on...
No, not necessarily, because you could say old man...
White beard.
Gray hair, white, you know.
Because I think you didn't mention the white beard until after he got punched.
And more importantly, you could say long beard without saying white for a while.
It was very hard to picture the action when it happened, because you said, like, he strikes him with a closed fist, and then afterwards you're like, oh, he had a beard, and he's old. Like, if you just said, oh, it's an old man with, you know... It's an old bearded man with white hair or whatever. And
well, I didn't describe that.
And handcuffed to a table. Like, I didn't know that until you mentioned, like, restraining against them.
These people don't exist. If you're saying that as an author when you're writing about people, you're already not in a great frame of mind. Because they kind of sort of have to exist for you.
Because I also don't know what
Gwinnett.
I don't know what Gwinnett or Franklin look like in the context of the story. Like, even just be like business suit or any kind of explanation.
My biggest bit of confusion was I didn't know what either of them, like, one was supposed to be the muscle and the other was supposed to be like the
good cop, bad cop.
No.
But why, I didn't get like.
Gwinnett had been doing it for longer.
Good cop, bad cop, I think would work.
But I don't think the CIA does good cop, bad cop. I think they just do bad cop.
One,
I think
they totally do. They don't even do bad cop anymore because it's not effective.
They say they don't do bad cop.
If you just had Gwinnett, or sorry, if you just had Franklin say like this is me, like or this is what Franklin's wearing, like super basic, just, you know, suit, and then you say Gwinnett, he's slightly older than Franklin. I would even have more context for that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that wasn't there, when they strike him, anything with action, it was very hard to picture.
And also, the middle joke is the confrontation between those two characters. The fact that they have a disagreement about how to deal with this client, which I think you, again.
Franklin's the one who's punching him. This poor guy feels so sick about punching him. Is it his job? I thought it was the other guy's job to do the punching.
Oh, no, it's both of their job. He loves his job.
But he just doesn't. It can't be both of their jobs.
I would suggest, like, Grant, you just wrote this as, like, a fun thing.
Yeah, this is just putting an idea down.
But I would suggest, like, if you were to ever tighten this up or do something else with it, I would rather see Franklin be the, like, really reluctant guy who's like, you could do more jokes that hint at it. Where, like, it's not a joke, but then when you look back on it, it is a joke where he's like, oh man, you know, I hate this. I hate doing this job, but I'm the best that there is at this thing.
No, he's not the best. But what I'm saying is, whatever.
But the thing I was going to say was the joke about if my kids saw me do this, they would hate me.
Yeah, if they knew what I was doing.
And then you're like, well, why? He's not even really, he's just standing there. He's not actually hitting this poor old man. But then the fact that he's involved, he's like, hit him again. You know, like that kind of thing. Like he's the guy giving the orders, but not actually punching.
Because you can tell that Max is hiding the ball.
Yeah.
About something in the script.
Right,
before.
Right.
Because I thought, because of the way he's very reluctant to describe, like, who the character is, I'm thinking it's playing around the word client, which is why I've been such a stickler about that.
Right.
It's because I'm like, oh, this guy must be paying them.
Somehow.
He's paying for this. There must be something they need to get out of him. I actually thought
it was an S&M thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because, again, you never name names. And when you do that, my first reaction is sex.
My idea was that Franklin loves doing this. But even he gets a sickly feeling doing it to Santa Claus.
That's the thing.
But
Gwinnett, I'm not sure that
has been doing
through.
It for so long.
You could have him say, like, I've done this 100 times to 100 different men, but this is the first time I started to question, am I a good person? You know, like that.
Yeah.
Those kind of questions where I'm like, ooh, who is it? Like, then when you finally make the reveal, you're like,
and then
oh,
it's
shit.
Obama.
No, I think we all really like this idea, and it's presented in a good way. There was just small things about it that were confusing.
Yeah.
That if you just put one or two lines in, would clear up without revealing your.
I like to focus on the violence more than the characters.
What I brought in this week was a very terrible draft. Of something that I'm...
One, time out. It's not terrible. How is it terrible?
Because I already know the changes I want to make. And what? Okay, so if you don't think it's terrible, it's to the benefit of the outline. This is me just taking the outline and just writing everything I thought as
it's
individual
not terrible.
Scenes.
Well, it thank needs you. Work. It's a frame.
But I've received some criticism from Malachi, the guy who I'm working with this on, who wants to actually film it.
Oh, is Malachi doing this?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way.
He's bought a special camera just for it.
So it is a screenplay, just so we clarify.
Yeah, sorry, it's a short film.
For podcasters, Malachi is our camera wizard.
Yeah. Super great dude who just wants to film all the stuff.
All the time.
Yeah. So he came up with this idea. We wanted to do something super low budget. That was the primary thing. It's like, well, we live in the woods. We have access to the
woods
all the time. What's something we could do in the woods with camera work that would be cheap that we could still make pretty good? Mm-hmm. And so the idea basically is, supposedly there was a plague that happened in America before the settlers landed, before the Spanish landed,
yeah,
that wiped out way more people than the Black Plague. Yeah, like 90%. Supposedly, I don't actually know the historicity of that. I've only read a couple things that supported it.
And they're conflicting.
Exactly.
Yeah. As a Bachelor of History, I'll allow it.
Right. Okay.
A bachelor?
So, the idea is, what are some of those people like, and what were their religions like, and if they came back, what would they seem like? This is basically about a group of very naive people who, in present day, who go camping and find themselves possessed by the spirits of these people who were in the middle of something horrible. That's essentially it.
I liked it. The only real thing I had to say is that the terror and actions of people wasn't. I know this is a first draft you're reading.
Oh no! Wasn't there for me. Just like, so you know, I think this draft is terrible.
Like if your friend gets stabbed.
I think better than a lot of horror movies I've seen.
Oh
in
the
no! Last
I quite agree. But I feel like your friend gets stabbed. Do you keep running or do you try to help your friend? And then a lot of the terror, they're like,
let's stop.
Let's stop and discuss
this. Is no one heroic?
Knife wielding.
Is mm-hmm. no one heroic?
Yeah,
that's what it feels like. Is that nobody's heroic?
I felt like no one had. Where no one was like, where no one was like, even fuck you, let me die. I almost feel like you need one person.
Well, I gotta admit,
who is stand your ground, fuck everything,
and not even,
I will die.
But if the four of us went camping, and then Liam suddenly like literally started coming at people with a knife, and like he took a slash at Josh, and
LaForge
like,
would and destroy cut, me.
Let's just for the sake of example, you literally cut him, and whether he's mortally wounded or not.
I'm gonna think something
happened to Liam. He's lost his mind. We need to get the fuck out of here. I'm not gonna suddenly go, oh Josh, let me put my hand on your boo boo, and Liam, you stop that, sir.
I agree with you, but I do also understand where that criticism is coming from.
I would tackle Liam if he's trying to kill us.
And again,
but
LaForge,
that happens.
LaForge would snap my
that
neck, and
in
I would
the
be
script.
Dead.
And then
but
he
I mean,
spits
like
the
he
thing.
Cuts the.
I'm too nice.
They stab the one girl and then or the guy, and they all leave.
No. Time
and
out.
Then they stab.
If I went crazy. You would kill me.
I wouldn't. If it was an option not to kill you, I wouldn't kill you.
You would totally kill me.
I would try not to.
You need to kill me.
Just
snap an arm off.
Are you asking me to kill you right now?
I'm just saying.
Ritually, please.
If worse comes to worse and I become the person that I not am,
okay,
kill me.
Okay, so if what happens to you, what happened in this?
If I become a monster,
basically,
see,
kill
no matter
me.
No matter
what
happen, he
if
says
what happens
now,
in this story,
so if you start listening to the
happens,
Smiths a lot,
happens
kill you?
To you,
kill me.
Okay, cool.
I'm
we
telling you right
that.
Now, yeah. Josh ain't gonna do it because he knows if he explains it to the police, they'll never believe him.
So, Liam, what you like, need is a
you're
wristband
in the woods
that says, "If possessed, do not resuscitate."
You don't go to the police. You leave him in the woods. We have alligators.
So I'll tell you a few things that I want to change about this. Yeah. All right, and I want to get you guys feedback on that.
I hated Pat.
Okay.
I did hate Pat.
Okay, good.
I figured
I'm glad you guys are honest about that.
I didn't hate Pat because I figured she was going to be the one who was going to make a change because she started off really bitching about it, and then it made sense that she's. It just made sense to me.
I would rather her die first.
Yeah, I wanted her dead.
Damn, man.
I really hate Pat. Fuck Pat.
Because I knew. No.
I'm glad that you guys feel anything about
no,
Pat.
I started
really?
Reading this,
yeah.
And I'm like...
No, within two lines, I was like, I'm over Pat.
I pictured Pat as a girl from our past that I hate.
Oh, yeah, no, immediately. I'm like, I didn't even need the description.
Can she
like,
die?
I know who that fucking bitch is.
I totally made her up, but I'm glad that you guys connected with her. Maybe I'll keep her.
Don't get me wrong. Pat was annoying at first, but I figured she's annoying because...
She grows a little bit, right? Well, she's the last one.
Yeah.
In 10 minutes...
No. First to die.
Okay, so apparently you two know this person.
Yes.
And me and Doug don't. Yeah.
But I've been camping. I hate Pat.
Growth growth in 10 minutes, I think, is a little extreme. And stopping in the middle of the woods while you're being chased to discuss strategy, probably not going to happen.
Okay, no, I agree with you. One of the things I want to change is that the moment that, I'm trying to remember the name of the character, Sadie gets possessed by Ahanu?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, the moment that Sadie becomes possessed and then she's pulled out of the hole, I want the rest of the story to be from her perspective.
Sadie's perspective?
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay.
So now it's just danger. This is a person. And I want the people that you've become familiar with at this point to look like strangers to this person.
Oh, my God.
And then from then on, that you're only looking at it through Sadie's perspective until the very end.
Oof.
That could be interesting.
That's interesting and also difficult.
Sure, yeah. It's difficult.
I think the best way I've seen that done is in the terrible, terrible movie Pathfinder, but they showed Vikings from a perspective of someone who's never seen one before.
Right, right, right.
And I think they did it really well.
See, I was thinking that this needs to feel, from the moment that Sadie comes out and sees, it's been a while since I've written this, the character that Matt Wild possesses at the beginning, the girl, then it needs to feel like Apocalypto from start to finish.
Okay.
Here's an idea then. If you want it to be from... go ahead, what are you going to say?
I almost feel like that's not hidden enough. As soon as there's... especially if this is a screenplay, that's going to feel like a tone shift.
No, that was my idea, is that it should.
And then you're going to know something's up.
And also...
is it supposed to be hidden, or is this supposed to be...
I don't think it should be hit. Well, sorry. I don't know what it should be. My intention is to, in the next draft, make it so that more is discussed about the potential people that lived there before.
Okay.
I think I want Jake to be kind of the mouthpiece, because he's the person who's most comfortable out here camping. Like, Jake is the one who's done it before. Even his lover, Mike, is kind of a little too uncomfortable being out in the wilderness.
Jake, I can see that as a wilderness. How would he have information about people who died before the Spanish got here?
Well, no, only because I would imagine he's an anthropologist. That was the idea. It's like
all you have to say is like he knows this.
Yeah, it's a short film. It's like in this area, in one of the courses I took, they discovered whatever, and that like that, I think I want Jake to be the mouthpiece. Yeah. Well, what I was thinking is also I think if you change the perspective to be from Sadie's point of view, when Matwau leaves Carol's body and gets into Mike, then it should be extra scary.
And also, I don't know the rules of possession.
Okay. Well, I guess the idea was that...
Liam, this is a movie. You just make up your own rules.
Well, the idea is that black stuff comes out.
Max, I will choke you across this table.
The mechanic is black stuff. The idea that I wanted... The main sticking points is that I wanted, obviously, Ahanu to be a very sympathetic character, where you don't have to know him to understand why he's so terrified. And then I want the shift from Mike being who Mike normally is to becoming Matwau, who Carol was,
yes,
to be very immediate. And I think one of the things I'm missing from there is there's no signature moves. There's no limp, no affectation that Matwau has that he picks up. Yeah, when he transfers from Carol to Mike. And I would like, I think I want to change Brinley's dialogue at the beginning so that when at the end you see her again, it's a much larger shift to when she's addressing Ahanu.
Here's another thought about making it more clear that there's a
and sexier.
No,
sexier.
That there's a recognition.
So far, at least as far as I've written, it's not sexy. It's not sexy at all.
If he possessed her, I think the first 5 minutes would have been like,
I don't think he would have cared.
Like, we were touching our breasts,
but to
and they were touching their breasts and going, ooh, ooh. These are men. Yeah, just so you're aware.
We're possessing ladies.
Here's a thought to sell the recognition between these two, but yet have it separate from, like, the friends are just there, and these two enemies are having this, like, recognition. What if, from the moment that a possession happens, that person only speaks in this ancient dialect, but you can have it subtitled?
Okay.
So if you want to have it from the possessed Sadie's perspective, they're like, Sadie, what's wrong with you? And it's gibberish, gibberish, gibberish. And it's like, who are you people? Where's my thing or whatever? So, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we are hearing it.
We're Deadpooling it.
The people who aren't possessed are speaking English and not understanding anything.
Exactly.
That's going on.
And then from Sadie's perspective, we understand Sadie's perspective because we can read the subtitles and know exactly what's being said. Why she's, and you can put the backstory in the shoes, like, where is, you know, where's the bad guy and where's the village or whatever.
Yeah, so I like
getting,
that too.
We're getting backstory that way. But like the backstory that you'd want to get, like, again, I'm assuming if you start it with a girl in the hole and she's scared. People run up, they start speaking English to her, and they're like, Sadie, let's get you out of there. Clearly, they know her.
Sure.
And they're saying these things to her. But as soon as she opens her mouth, and it's a subtitle, where am I? you know, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. You realize some next level shit's happening. And then as soon as she starts name dropping things of like other, you know, evils and gods, right, and shit, you're like, whoa, something seriously fucked up is going on. But you are all the time seeing it from her perspective.
Okay.
So the other people around her being confused are fine.
No, I really like how that sounds. I do want to try that. I hope it'll work because that sounds exactly what I'm going for.
Having to weigh it between, do you want them to be from her perspective the whole time, or do you want to have character development of the other people first, mm-hmm, or do you, like, what do you value more?
I think there's a lot of things to be gained by previous character development. For instance, when, mm-hmm, the characters become a different character,
like Mike and
Carol and Brinley. Like I think that there's got to be some value there.
But even before that, I think there's some advantage to going to the campsite first because then you're playing off expectations,
yeah,
of a traditional horror movie.
And this is
why do I care? But the whole thing is,
I almost think you can make a hybrid of that. You could have again 20 seconds, 25 seconds, dragging her out of the pit, mm-hmm, and have that moment, and then go to the beginning.
Now it's
and
a
then
shift,
and then replay that moment, and only have that the only time out of time moment. I think you can do both of those things well.
I do want to ask if this came across. One of the reasons I picked the characters I did, where it's four women and two men, both of whom are gay, is that I wanted to kind of subconsciously signal to the reader that this is a group of people who've chosen to go on this outing together, and it's kind of a protected, safer space because they're kind of, you know, they're not the social norm.
About fucking in the woods.
Exactly. This is not a slasher film.
Yeah.
Like one and then these
no
people
morality
and these,
tale.
Exactly. And these people, this is not the classic
drinking in the woods.
Well, it's not the classic slasher tale where there's heroes and villains, yeah, or anything like this. Like, these are people who just are normal people, probably from the city, unseasoned. Like, they're just here.
There's no Johnny Football Hero. Yeah.
No, not at all.
And no, like, yeah, we just did it.
And
no,
I made the most. And my intention was to make the most capable person, Jake, who is the most effeminate man, but he knows the most about everything that they're doing. He's the most capable. He's been camping 100 times before, but he's not. He's not somebody you'd picture as heroic or anything like that.
So you're subverting expectations.
Yes, but only in a way.
But not in a comic way.
Only to make them feel more vulnerable when something goes wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. But I had the idea of, like Doug was saying, for the whole, or like Liam was saying, if you were showing characters running,
right,
and then jumping back to everyone being fine at the camp.
I think that would be more interesting to me. If the first image is dragging her out.
And then making
the gibberish connection, and then having no context for that at all,
yeah,
and then having the rest of it.
Now, do you think it would be interesting if? Okay, so this is the idea I'm having as you're saying this.
All right,
they're coming out, and they're like, and Hanu acts like, I don't know any of you,
yeah,
and then one of them like takes Sadie and is like, Sadie, what is this? And then we flash back to a moment where that character says something,
yes,
specific,
yeah,
and now Hanu is remembering it through Sadie,
yes.
So he's
that
like,
can work.
He's getting context.
They get
through
the language, right?
Because
they make that point at the end where they're like, "Oh, we can do more crazy shit with this language."
Was that ham-fisted?
No, I liked it.
No,
I felt a little like I felt, but
the whole thing is, can you handle it better? I don't know.
The English was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me, the less I know about their whole culture,
mm-hmm,
like when Pat pins down Sadie, he's like, tell me what the fuck is going on. He's like, okay, he came from the stars and he did this, and then we have to fight back with this. I would cut that right after it says he came from the spine. She looks up and sees the galaxy and is like, oh fuck, like that, like I don't need to know anything beyond that.
Okay,
like, because to me, like, it's scarier to just like, oh, then he came, then he butchered this, and then he did this, and then he did this. Like, that is scary, but that almost humanized it too much.
So remove some context, like remove explanation.
Yeah, almost
keep
like
the same.
Yeah, but almost like the best explanation this person can give in such short time is he came from the spine, and he like motions to the sky, and then Pat makes that connection, like, oh, this, I thought it was weird before. It just jumped to something I can't even comprehend. But that's all, he can't because he doesn't have enough English in him, he can't go further than that.
Okay.
So then the rest of it can be like in subtitled, like, I wish I could explain it to you. It's way more complicated. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
So if you decide to go with subtitles, you can reveal more to the audience that way.
I like that idea. I really do.
But then if you do go with subtitles, only have like two things in English broken severely, where it's like just to get the fear across.
He's like digging deep just to find those words.
Yeah, just to put the fear in her of what's at stake.
Okay.
And that would be the only time I would put it in English, because again, the less that I know, or now that I know she's aware of like what's at stake, and she's like, well, let me help you. We can do this. Once she's on board, that level of it, the less that she knows, the less I know, the scarier it seems to me. Then finally, you're doing this crazy fucking ritual. I don't know how any of it works. All I know is that they need one last one to do a ritual to bring back the guy from the spine.
Right.
Then that's like that. That's creepy enough to me.
Okay.
So.
In its super proto state, where I've listed it as vomit draft.
Uh-huh.
Do you think it gets its point across?
Oh, it got definitely. The point across, yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I like that term vomit draft, because my story is definitely a vomit draft.
Right.
As well. Yeah.
I like what vomit draft represents, but since I didn't like the name, I want to call it the doggy draft, because it's the rough draft.
Jesus Christ. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you very much for that feedback. That's all extremely helpful. All right. So now we're moving on to the bad story trailers part of the podcast.
My favorite part.
Where each week we throw a raw idea or two into the mix and try to beat it into the shape of a movie, and we're going to cut together a trailer. This week is special because it's the first week that we are going to try a randomized way of doing this. So I've created this sheet that has 100 different story genres, and we're going to roll two 10-sided dice because we have them because we're huge nerds. There we go. And we're going to roll them three times to find three genres, and we're either going to pick our favorite or combine two of them.
Nice.
Everybody game?
Yep. Or all three if we're feeling really frisky.
And I am.
Let's find out.
Number one.
56. What's 56? Jangashi fiction. All right. Now,
oh, gosh.
Explain what it is.
Reroll.
Stories about Jangashi, the hopping corpses under the control of Taoist priests derived from Chinese literature and folklore.
I'm okay with this.
That's
right
a
now.
Genre?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's a very popular genre. Next is 25, which is Gong On fiction.
What the fuck is this?
I'm not making this movie.
All right, no, hang on. Gong On is decent. It's a subgenre of historical crime fiction that involves government magistrates who solve criminal cases.
Okay.
Which it could be
historical detective.
No, okay. Historical magistrates who solve criminal cases. So there isn't like a detective specifically.
Chinese they're lawyers. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but like it could be. Imagine medieval times. There's no investigator. It's a
the judge or whatever.
Or even just a political official where it's like, hey, somebody was killed and I want justice. And this guy's like, oh, geez, how are we going to do this? How are we going to figure it out? That's what kind of fiction is.
Okay. These are genres I never knew existed.
All right. Third time's a charm.
Can't wait to break into these humorous stories. Six.
Six is Girls with Guns.
All right.
I know how to tie all three together. I already know. I already know.
Okay, Girls with Guns.
Let's keep
number this
three.
This is a subgenre of action films and animation, often Asian films and anime, that portray a strong female protagonist who uses the use of firearms to defend against or attack a group of antagonists.
Already know. All
Doug.
Three.
All right, Doug.
All
yeah. You're up.
This is, I didn't, I, you go, I, up until the third one, I didn't know how the hell this was going to work, but now all three. This is that, the what's the category, second category called? The Magistrate?
Gong On.
The Gong On. This is a Gong On film about a trial that's underway. So we're seeing it from the perspective of the judge or whatever. This is almost like Rashomon, where we're hearing these girls are on trial.
That's a great movie to name for,
yes.
Gong On fiction.
So it's these girls are on trial for committing like a mass killing.
Mm-hmm.
But from their perspective, they were stopping these hopping animated corpses from a zombie outbreak.
Okay.
But there's no real evidence.
But nobody knew they were already dead until.
Yeah.
But now they're dead with bullet holes in them.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're trying to defend themselves by saying, no, we put down this thing. And they're like, first of all, you illegally got these guns. You don't own these guns. Mm-hmm. And you murdered all these people. But like, we stopped this apocalypse from starting. This poor person who has to judge them is like, what the fuck? You know, like, how do you?
What if the judge is the Taoist monk who was running it the whole time?
Ooh.
Well, then
no.
He would just. Because
then
he
that's
would,
not
no,
a story. Because then he would just
He would say, no, you're all going to jail.
Then we go, what was that, Boondock Saints? Then they break out in the courtroom and they have to shoot the Taoist monk in the court.
Now, one of the things
that's a girls with guns moment.
I'm going to look up is it uses the term hopping corpses, but I want to make sure that they don't mean jumping corpses. That they mean people like corpses travel from person to person. Is that
no,
the idea?
No, I think they mean like literally like
they frogs, jump? Like
they,
jumping
they,
corpses.
They frolic.
All right, let me check this here. Yeah, it's hopping right. Vampire zombie. It's a type of reanimated corpse in Chinese legends and folklore. All right, here we go.
Yeah, I think this has got to be an anime. All
right, so we're going to clarify.
It's our first animated film.
We're gonna clarify jingashi, okay? It says, a jingashi, also known as a Chinese hopping vampire or zombie, is a type of reanimated corpse in Chinese legends and folklore. Jingashi is read gongshi in Cantonese, kuong tai in Vietnamese, gangshi in Korean, and kyonshi in Japanese, or kyongshai. I'm not sure how that's read. It's typically depicted as a stiff corpse dressed in official garments from the Qing dynasty, and it moves around by hopping with its arms outstretched. It kills living creatures to absorb their ki, or life force, usually at night, while in the day it rests in a coffin or hides in dark places such as caves. Jingashi legends have inspired a genre of jingashi films and literature in Hong Kong and East Asia.
Is it qi and qing, I believe, right?
No, qi and ki. Is that what you mean? The two different life forces?
No, qi, and I think it's the Qing dynasty. I think it's Q-I-N-G. I'm not sure.
I think the Qing dynasty is a different dynasty.
Yeah.
Check it out.
There's one that is fictional.
Oh, Qing Chao? All right, it says Chinese pinyin King Chao or Qing Chao King or Da King. No, it's all over the map. Yeah. as far as the pronunciation.
It's almost like I think the continent of Asia has different ways to pronounce things.
If it's like Rashomon, it's this guy doing this. He has to... whether it's in a trial in a courtroom or whether it's like a villain.
What if they have each of these women separated in separate rooms?
Tell their own version of the
almost
story.
Almost like a Inside Man.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, like that. So there's these hopping corpses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there's girls with guns.
Yes.
They're on trial.
Yes.
And the protagonist is the character... investigating the truth.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, where is this taking place?
I think to spice it up, France.
Okay. Fine. France.
I was gonna say have it take place in China or Japan, just because. Now, what's the? But I'll tell you why.
This, too easy.
No, right. But I'll tell you why. Because
no.
What's the genre?
Screw it. French Canadian.
What's the genre for the hopping corpses? What are they called?
Jingashi.
Jingashi. Because then you could call the movie Jingashi a Go Go.
Hmm. I like that as well.
Okay, what if it takes place during the 1950s, during the go-go
period? A sock hop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the 60s. What in the 60s more of a go-go? Like
60s,
go-go
60s France? I don't know anything about 60s
swinging
France.
England.
It could, oh, yeah.
60s yeah, so, France. So Austin Powers.
Yes.
So Austin Powers area, girls with guns. They're dressed up with the beehive hairdos and the... Mm-hmm.
Can it be like mod, like with the Vespas?
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And who played Alfred in the new Nolan Batman?
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine is there drunk as shit.
Yeah.
So is Michael Caine the investigator?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
Can Twiggy be one of our girls with guns?
Yes.
I don't know who
Michael
that is.
Caine can't
the
be.
Model.
She was a model.
Okay.
Michael Caine, it's girls with guns. He can't be an investigator.
Yes, he can.
No,
the girls with
guns.
The girls with guns killed the zombies.
Yeah, this is Gong On Fiction.
Oh,
with a Jingashi premise.
Okay.
And what was the third criteria we had?
Can our Jingashi be in bowlers then?
Girls with guns, the Gangshi.
Gong On, Jingashi.
And Jingashi, the investigative part. And then the.
All right.
Jingashi, they got to be wearing bowler hats and suits. And they drive us up out of the grave.
Okay, so our main character is now
is Michael Caine.
Is Michael Caine? He it says magistrate, so he's not a police officer.
No.
So
he's a lawyer.
This should be a parliamentary investigation, the way that we would in America have congressional
hearings. Yeah.
Okay. So we have a congressional hearing. Or a parliamentary investigation where Michael Caine is presenting questions to people on the stand who are anime-style badass girls, except for they're in 60s garb with beehive hairdos.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our movie title?
Jingashi a Go-Go was
Jingashi a Go-Go I like.
Okay, Jingashi a Go-Go. That's our movie.
I like Jingashi a Go-Go.
Done.
William Rackham was the best inspector Scotland Yard had ever known. William, please, we've never had a case so strange. Your country once again requires your service.
Sorry to disappoint you, Prime Minister, but I've served my bid.
I'm afraid I can't take no for an answer.
The full power of a parliamentary investigation couldn't prepare him for this.
So you're saying these men was already dead when you shot them? Tell me, Monica, why would you go around shooting corpses of religious minorities?
Well, they wasn't dead exactly. They was trying to eat us, they were. We came out of the disco, you know, and they just came over the buildings.
You claim that these dead men were zombies?
No, sir. I don't know zombies from onions, but I don't think they jump like that.
Please, Minister, I'm not the man you bleed and want for this. I'm out of bloody touch.
You're getting close, Inspector. Keep your chin up.
But the family of the deceased only offered more questions.
So your husband died of the flu?
2 years ago.
But you claimed that these women killed him 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
Join Inspector Rackham in Jingashi Agogo.
I'm getting a bit too old for this sort of thing.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Bad Storytellers, now presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream us from Google Play. I've been your host, Josh LaForge, and I'd like to thank my writing group again, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, and Max Wessel. Now remember, as listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow to find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Bad Storytellers on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
It's cool, man. All right, hang on.
Shall we all just...
How's Skyrim going?
Are you playing Skyrim right now?
He's playing Skyrim right now.
Where are you?
What race are you?
He's an orc.
You're an orc? Fuck yes, dude. Berserk is the best racial power, period.
Oh, he's behind the
wall. He's over there.
Oh,
so I can't.
Because you have omnipresent here.
Yeah, yeah.
He's over there.
Omnidirectional.
Where are you at right now?
I'm on the couch.
No. In the game.
Oh.
Are you using axes? Fuck that, dude.
What system? Are you PC?
Orcs are better with axes.
Xbox.
Oh. Because with PC, fucking get a lightsaber and kick ass.
No, what? No, dude.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.